Well, good morning. For Thursday, May 30th, this is Consumerization Nation. I'm Jack Madden talking to Colin Steele.
Good afternoon from Boston, Jack.
Hello. And with us, as per usual, we have James Furbish.
What's going on, everyone?
Not too much. Well, good to have all of you together again. It's been about 2 months since we've done one of these shows with the three of us together, but that doesn't mean that not much has been happening. We've been doing a lot recently, so I have sort of a list of things to get through for the show today. First of all, we'll start out with a quick recap of Citrix Synergy that Colin and I were at last week, and then. Jim, before that, you were at BlackBerry Jam.
Yes. Yep. BlackBerry Live was BlackBerry World. Now it's BlackBerry Live. And there's a separate conference just for, I think, mobile developers called BlackBerry Jam.
Called Please Come and Develop Some Apps for Us. I'll try to keep away from the snark, but I have had a very frustrating 2 hours with the Z10.
How so?
Oh, endless error code 60, error code 1, it telling me that I need to be online when I was online. It doesn't know what time or day it is, despite the fact that it's connected to the internet. You know, it's connected to the whole internet. It can't find a time server somewhere.
Cell tower too, right? So it doesn't even matter that it's not even on Wi-Fi. It's still has connectivity.
No. You know what? Okay, so here's the story. You guys remember, so that in the long saga of me and my mobile devices,
yes. Last fall, Hong Kong, right?
What's that?
Still somewhere in Hong Kong?
Yeah. So, you know, I lost my 4S somewhere in Hong Kong and went through a couple of loaner phones, including a Windows Phone 8 device that was, you know, it was pretty nice, but it had no apps. You know the story. And then I was on an iPhone 4 for a while, but then we were going to Bryforum London, so the iPhone 4 didn't work. So I was back on the Windows Phone. Came back from Bryforum, and the Z10 had been delivered to our office that they sent us to play with. And I was immediately leaving the next day to go down to Citrix Synergy. And my thought was like, well, do I take the big plunge and just activate this thing on my line and take it down and use it all week at Synergy? And boy, am I glad that I didn't, because getting this thing set up and working has been a huge exercise in frustration.
See, it's funny. So BlackBerry, whatever they're called now. But they gave out through another company at the conference, they gave everyone a Z10. And I promptly gave it to my wife. And she likes it.
Did she have error code 60?
No, it's been pretty – I don't know if she's used it extensively. She hasn't taken it to the Verizon store and put her number on it or anything like that. But – she mostly just uses it for surfing the web and stuff when sitting on the couch at home. But it seems pretty nice. And we haven't had any error codes. I haven't really done a deep dive into the device, probably like you have. But we haven't had too many problems, issues with error codes and stuff like that, and things not working.
Well, so here's the thing. I've been trying to get into the device to do a deep dive, but I've been. I've been foiled at every turn. And the point of what the three of us do here, you know, it's not to sit around and complain about devices, but when I just can't even use the thing, geez.
Did you try pushing the, cuz there was an OS update that came out? Did you it sounds like you weren't even able to.
Oh no, I did the OS update, and then from there, I still the BlackBerry App World app will not launch. That just shuts itself down. So, maybe the app needs to be updated, but I have to go you know, be in the app to be able to update it. It's very Kafka-esque.
Yeah, I'd say that's a good sign that probably not going to be sticking with the phone. The hard thing is that you only get one shot, right? So regardless of whatever, like, that's just colored your entire experience of the BlackBerry 10.
Like, if
you know, for good or bad, it's that's it. Like, they had their one chance, and you're probably never, ever, ever going to go back and use it, no matter how good or rock solid the platform ends up becoming.
Well, it's like a Taylor Swift song.
Well, you know, let's say that this is just okay. You know, set up headaches. It's annoying even for a technical person, but maybe my experience isn't typical. You know, I'm doing something slightly differently because, you know, they just sent me a random one. It's not like, you know, it's not like getting the, you know, having to activate a device sent to me or anything like that. But once I was in the device and once I was, you know, looking around in the BlackBerry App World store, if you look at like they have like the top 25 featured apps, and like two of them are battery life monitors, and one of them is like a gas station finder app.
Always important.
Yeah.
Because there aren't enough of those around.
And, you know, with the people always say it's like the chicken and the egg thing, you know, for apps and you know, gaining steam behind the ecosystem. But here's the thing, like now you know, like, look at what's happened in the last couple of months, you know, with Samsung Knox and, you know, VMware Horizon Mobile, like, the one, like, the rock-solid dual persona experience, like, now that you can get that in Android devices and that, you know, those devices, you know, there's the stuff with Knox being approved for use by the Department of Defense. Like,
yeah, but they don't have picky standards. I mean, they approved BlackBerry 10, they approved Samsung, they approved – I mean, they pretty much approved everything, you know, iPhone. I think pretty much everything but Windows Phone.
But I was actually talking to BlackBerry yesterday, and they said that the iOS and Android approvals were just for the hardware, and they didn't approve, like, the vast majority of, like, the software uses. And
interesting.
Yeah. It was basically just like, yeah, you can do this, but you, like, if you try to take advantage of any of the functionality of the two platforms, we don't, you know, it's basically just like, you can have this device, but we don't deem the vast majority of it to be secure. And BlackBerry was saying that theirs was the only one that got full approval.
That's interesting. That's something. Do you have an article coming out on that, or like
no?
It'd be great. And one of the three of us, I guess, should like dig into what do all of the various government defense things actually mean. We need like
right.
a,
yeah.
A
I mean,
deep
I,
dive
it
that.
Is. I did mean to look into it and just didn't get around to it after the call, but because I don't want to take BlackBerry on their face value either. You know, I'm assuming that the approval was when it was publicized. It was done more so by iOS and Android proponents, but I'd like to, you know, try to find an independent source to find out exactly what is and what is not approved from each platform.
Yeah, yeah. But like the bottom line is, yeah, you know, this device, it's fine. There's nothing wrong with it. But yikes.
Well, like, it's hard to, you know, jump back to your point about the app. So the one thing that I've kind of noticed is that, at least in my experience, the operating system, the UI, it takes a little bit of getting used to. A lot of the gestures are a little bit different than, say, iOS and Android, you know, where some of the stuff you're swiping down and up
and,
to
you
kind
know,
of
there's,
close
that's
things
a,
out.
That's okay.
Which is fine. You can get used to it. I mean, you pick it up pretty quickly.
You get used to it if it makes sense and is intuitive. Like, where you run into problems is, I haven't tried out the BlackBerry, but Microsoft did send us a Windows 8 tablet to use back in the fall, and that just wasn't intuitive.
Yeah.
Like, you know, if opened up the Metro version of Internet Explorer, for example, and the nav bar doesn't show up automatically, like where you would type in the URL.
Right, you got to pull it down or something.
Well,
right?
I started swiping from the top. I was like, oh, it must be at the top, and if I just swipe from the top of the screen, I'll get it. And like some other menu popped up, but that didn't.
Yeah.
And that's because in the Metro version of IE, the URL bar is actually at the bottom of the screen.
Right.
Yeah.
But you would never like naturally think to do that. So, I mean, there's a difference between a learning curve and intuitiveness. And
yeah,
it can be intuitive and have a learning curve, and that's fine. But if it's not intuitive, your learning curve is going to be so long and frustrating that you're less likely to stick with it.
Yeah. Like navigation bars have been
always at the top
for the last 20 years.
For the last 25 years.
Netscape, top. AOL, top.
So
maybe they just install that with 8.1.
I don't know.
Coming out, put the start button back.
Yeah, Windows Blue, now with nav bar on top.
Obviously, there are times when it is very appropriate to say, okay, we've been doing something for 25 years and we're going to do it a completely different way now. But like, just, you know, curious, guys, how did you come to that decision? And, you know, but
right.
Okay,
I mean, like, if it was at the bottom and it was visible at the bottom the whole time, I mean, at least you would see it and you'd get used to it. And then maybe the next iteration you have it swipe up. But just to go from having it be in a prominent, visible place to being a completely different place and hidden, you have to kind of do those big changes in steps for the most part.
But okay, so once again here, like, you know, little nitpicky operating system issues aside, because, you know, we could all go on about those all day. Jim, you wrote an article last week describing your whole sort of feelings after being at BlackBerry Live and their missed opportunities there. Give us the 15-second version of that.
Well, that'd be kind of hard to do. But so, I mean, the gist of it is that you go to BlackBerry Live, and, you know, they've got 76 million customers, and, you know, 95%. I'm going to make up numbers, but I'd say the overwhelmingly large majority of those 76 million customers are enterprises. They're
especially now
they're large businesses, right? I mean, no one going to BlackBerry Live is a, you know, consumer who, you know, walked into a Verizon store and bought a BlackBerry Bolt.
I mean, well, is anybody going to any of these conferences a consumer like that?
Well, I mean, you know, Apple or Google I/O maybe. But anyways, regardless, right? So their customer base is enterprises. It's organizations deploying, you know, mobile devices, secure mobile devices to employees. And, you know, the thing with mobile devices and the whole BYOD and a lot of what's kind of driven that is because, you know, the BlackBerrys just weren't that, I mean, good enough anymore. But the thing is, you know, you talk to people who aren't like tech savvy people, they really, you know, you ask them, okay, well, what devices does your company give you? And they're like, a BlackBerry, and I have an iPhone that I use. And the reason they say that is because the BlackBerry isn't good enough. But it comes with the caveat that if the BlackBerry was good enough, if it did most of the stuff that the iPhone or Android does, they would be more than happy to use that. And, you know, and so BlackBerry's
done. Do you think that's the case?
I think that people, and sorry, Colin, I don't mean to cut you off, but I just did. I think the thing is that we're different people. We're very picky about our technology. I mean, we're debating, you know, UI choices in Windows 8. But if you talk to most people, you know, the average person, your friends or family who have a mobile device at their phone, you know, they'll say, yeah, I'm okay using good technology, the container. I don't love it. The experience might not be great.
Wait, Jim, you've heard a random person on the street use the term container?
Well, they don't. They just say, like, everyone, you know, it's funny because you ask them, like, oh, you use a mobile device. What does your company do? And they're like, oh, have you ever heard of this thing called good technology? And it's like, yeah, that's what I do for my job. Like, of course I've heard of good technology. Like, you know, and so.
Wait, now you're saying you give the people on the street this, this sarcastic answer?
Well, to my friends.
And then I punch them in the face.
Yes. My friends and family, yes, I give them condescending replies when they when I ask them about this stuff.
I was actually at a Synergy. Alyssa Wood from Search Virtual Desktop was telling me her her boyfriend just got like a Citrix some sort of virtual desktop type thing at his job, and he came home and said, I'm doing the Citrix thing. Have you heard of it? And she's like,
my job.
Yeah, the same kind of answer you just had. Have I heard of it?
Well, it's always this horrible thing when you realize, like, you talk to these people about your job, and then, you know, you have this moment where, like, clearly, no matter how much we've talked about my job, you still have no idea what I do for my job.
Right. And I feel like that's, I mean,
okay.
Going back to the point, we go into all these really in-depth details, but back to what Jim was saying, most people just care if it is good enough for what they need it to do, and they don't really care how it gets done. And going back to the initial point of why BlackBerry started falling off in the first place is because it didn't do a good enough job. The only thing that people hate more than a phone that won't do what they need it to do is carrying around two phones. And I think a lot of people would be willing to say, you know, I'd rather have this one phone that maybe does 90% of what my old phone used to do and does it well, versus I'm going to carry around two phones with me and have to decide which I use for which task.
Yeah, because here's the dirty secret about mobile that
I
think we talk about enough.
Can we get some, like, sexy music going on in the background?
Most people, the large majority of people I gather, still use their mobile phone for communication purposes. So they primarily use it, you know, email, calendar, you know, text messaging, maybe some Facebook.
I would 100% disagree with you.
Maybe Twitter. Yeah, but Jack, think about the circles that you run in. I mean, we're talking like Ben Robbins, who has been mobile only for a year or whatever, like, he's an outlier. He is not, you know, some 30-year-old guy working in financial services that maybe he uses Conker, maybe he has a few apps that he uses. And I'm saying the large majority. I'm not saying that's the case for everyone, but I'm saying the large majority, you know, they use it when they travel. They probably have an iPad to actually do some work. They carry their laptop to use spreadsheets and stuff like that. The large majority of people using their cell phone really still just use it primarily for communication purposes.
I don't know. Hey, Justin,
if you're paying attention
to this conversation and you want to jump in on this point.
Jack, if you disagree with him, what else do you think the vast majority of people use their phones for?
Like regular typical worker in America.
The funny thing is, like, we're trying to determine if any of the three of us are like the best people to be talking about, like,
oh, we're totally not
to be talking about reality.
No, you're not.
Okay.
FYI.
You know, Facebook, Instagram, Google Maps. I'm just looking at my phone here.
Yeah.
I mean, the problem here, you know, we're all nerds. And we all have this, like, weird sense of what's appropriate for, you know, the public, and it's completely wrong.
But, Justin, you know normal people. What do they do?
I know normal people. they use Twitter, they use Facebook, they go Instagram like crazy, and they use Tumblr and, you know, that kind of stuff. But they don't care, you know, where the services are coming from or how they're working or, you know, on what device. They just want to work.
Right, and they just want it to work. And so company gave you a device that did that. And so this is, I guess, my point about BlackBerry. So BlackBerry, they came out with these devices that are intended to do that, so that an organization can give it to their employees and say, this is what we're providing you, and not have that employee come back and say, this doesn't suit my purposes, make my iPhone work for me in a work context. And I think they've to do that. But what's weird is that a lot of, like, and I guess the point of the article, to jump way, way back to the original question, was that, like, why, you know, you look at, like, Citrix and what they're doing, kind of the mobility stuff with Synergy, and you're like, they get it. Like, they know their audience, they know who they're serving, they know what kind of products they need to kind of roll out and how to do it. And you look at BlackBerry, and there's just a disconnect between who their audience is and like why they aren't just going like full steam ahead, you know, with, you know, Bez now, you know, with
Bez with
application management. It still has that device management that BlackBerry is known for. It can manage iOS and Android devices as well. And yet, you know, throughout the entire show of BlackBerry, you never heard like, here's our app partnership with Concur and, you know, these sort of enterprise apps that, that people want and need and should be deploying.
The other, thing that BlackBerry mentioned when I was on the phone with them yesterday is that when they make the official like secure workspace announcement, they will have like a Citrix-like announcement about their application management strategy. And they are working with third-party vendors to have that same kind of experience that Citrix talked about with Zen Mobile.
So they will have the more enterprise focused show then, because I don't know
if it's going to be a show, but at least you know or choose about it.
What we have to remember is that like 2009, 2010, when BlackBerry had their biggest sales, like they were, you know, I don't remember what the exact numbers were, but like 80% of these phones at that time were being sold to consumers, and you know. Consumers love these things because, you know, free texting through, you know, through BBM. And, you know, so we forget that even though BlackBerry has this, you know, they were the company that was built around secure corporate mobility, you know, at their largest point of success, you know, around 2009 and 2010 or so in 2008 was like largely from consumers buying their phone. So we're thinking hey, you guys have all these great enterprise credentials that you should be standing on the rooftops shouting about. But if they're like, if we know that they're very slow about bringing their thinking around. So if they're still thinking like, hey, you know, 2009 was an awesome year for us when all these consumers were buying our phone, like, how can we recapture the magic of 2009
it's not an either or thing though. Like they need to do both and they need to do them for separate audiences. And if one fails and the other succeeds, I think that's fine. Like they're not independent of each other, especially with the way they're laying out Bez now. They should be marketing the devices to consumers because like you said, one, that's consumers are the people who buy devices. We're not at a place now where the enterprises are the majority of the people of the buyers of smartphones that are being used in business. And on the enterprise side, Bez now is not a BlackBerry only management solution. You can manage iOS and you can manage Android. And that is a very emerging market where there's no clear leader that they have to make this humongous comeback against like there is in the device space. So it would be and they have a larger install base for their existing management solution than any of their competitors. I mean,
oh yeah, yeah, absolutely. And I think like the
so you can push. I think what they're doing now is they're focusing strictly on the device part because the management part isn't fully baked yet, which is okay for now. I mean, it needs to come out relatively soon, but so they're just going full steam ahead with the device. The management part will come along, and I think if they're smart, they will do an equally big push behind that as they have for the devices. And I think it all depends on how the product works and everything, but with their install base and the what little they've said about it so far, it seems like they'd be right in the thick of things in terms of competing in that application management market.
Oh, yeah, yeah, 100% absolutely. And I think the absolute best thing that they did was, you know, when the Universal Device Service came out, you know, when they had that free up, you know, free trade in your CALs for, you know, for Bez Fusion or, you know, for all the new stuff. And I don't know, I remember seeing somewhere like they were doing that through the summer. And man, I would just like
through the end of the year. Yeah. So you can still trade in your existing CALs now for Bez 10 through, I think, the end of 2013.
Okay, yeah, yeah, like, because, you know, when we do those consumerization road shows, like, I've had I've had a ton of people ask about like, hey, what, you know, what about this new, you know, the new like BlackBerry can manage Android and iOS stuff. And so like, hey, if they can do that, then awesome. You know, more power to them.
Yeah, it's just such an interesting, I think, you know, sometimes the reality on the ground. So I was at, did kind of a speaking event with the Wall Street Technology Association on the flip end of coming back from BlackBerry World. And, you know, this is the top, you know, like IT guys at, you know, these Wall Street, you know, banks, Deutsche, Barclays, you know, you name it. They're kind of like the biggest banks in the world. And it was interesting to go and speak. And there were all these other vendors. So like AirWatch was there and FiberLink and a few other kind of companies. And it was interesting, you know, they're all talking about like BYOD. And of course, it's how scary it is. And there are all these problems. And oh, by the way, like we also help you like solve those problems, you know. And then, you know, I kind of just out of curiosity, I was like, you know, took a quick poll and it was like, you know, show of hands, like, how many of you are actually like allowing BYOD in your organization? And out of the 50 or 60 people in the audience, it was, I could count maybe on my hand, you know, is how many of you guys are standardized on iOS? On maybe one or two hands, I could count the number of people in the audience that raised their hands. How many of you are still deploying BlackBerries? I could definitely not count on my hands. You know, it was probably 3/4 of the audience raised their hand that they were still standardized on BlackBerry. And so, you know, I think a lot of these, you know, the reality on the ground sometimes I think is remarkably different from, you know, what we talk about. And that's fine. Like we get paid to talk about like, you know, what's coming down the corner. What do you need to know? What, you know, do you want to stay on BlackBerry? And I get the sense that, you know, a lot of companies would be more than happy. Oh, you'll give me a free upgrade for my existing investments in Bez infrastructure. Great. I'll take it. I can handle any ownership scenario or device management and application scenario. Great. I'll take it, especially if it's free. And, you know, now you can install it on a single box alongside Bez 5. So you don't have to actually buy any new server boxes. And so it's, you know, I think that that's hard. The challenge again, though, and to go back to BlackBerry is that the app scenario on BlackBerry 10 is still pretty, you know, I guess limited,
But
to call it a good word. And that's the hard thing is that.
But Jim, the pushing iOS and Android management and the BB10 app scenario, like those are. Like if they're pushing lots of like modern MDM management, then like, you know, who cares then about, you know, about the BlackBerry devices?
I think it's pretty clear that when it comes to a lot of these phones, and this is sort of interesting, is that like when it comes to these phones and operating systems, Android, iOS, Windows Phone, BlackBerry, they're all pretty good. They all have, you know, kind of their unique features, but really all they are for the most part is just a place for apps and services. And why do people love iOS? I mean, it's not really iOS or the devices are nice, sure, but it's not necessarily the operating system. It's a fact that the apps are like really high quality and really easy to get to. I mean, really all my iPhone is just a launching pad for, you know, all the apps and services that I use on a daily basis.
It plays nice or nice-ish with a lot more services than Windows Phone and BlackBerry.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering, you know, maybe we should put a bow on this BlackBerry discussion. So I think that we're all in agreement then that they have a huge story that they'll be able to tell around their MDM and MAM for Android and iOS, and so we'll be looking to see to like how wholeheartedly they get behind that story versus how much they push the BB10 story.
Yeah, hopefully they won't be pushing BlackBerry Messenger channels or whatever that horrible thing was that they released. That was, ugh. Anyways, moving right along.
So moving right along. So, you know, Synergy, Citrix Synergy was last week. Colin and I were there. I don't think we have to rehash too much of it since we had, you know, we did have a podcast live from the show there last week. You know, in general, the overall theme was like not too much new stuff, but like, hey, we're doing all this stuff now.
Can I ask you guys a really silly question?
Sure.
What do you think of the branding behind the Works line? So
I just hate the X. Why can't we just start spelling words correctly?
Right. Okay. So I'm glad I'm not the only one. So this has been driving me crazy. And I get the whole Citrix EX thing, and I get that's like kind of part of their branding. But it doesn't bother me when it's at the like the front of a word, but at the end of a word, I don't know, for some reason it drives me crazy.
It's completely out of place. It's not even like capitalized or anything. I don't get the point of it.
Well, also remember every time somebody would tweet about the at work apps, you know.
Oh yeah, they had to change it because they had the at signal.
And also, mobile.
They could have just spelled works correctly and been done with it.
Yeah. Well,
at least they haven't changed share file with an X at the beginning of that. And
they should just call it, you know, Zen Data.
Don't give them any ideas, please.
Xerxes Data.
Well, you know, you can see how, you know, Absence is going with the now thing. But also remember that some of Mobile Irons are like internal apps are called. There's like Docs at Work, and they have a few things that have at work in them. So I wonder if there was also something there.
Yeah. But
regardless,
we don't want to go too deep into the show, but there's just a couple things I wanted, one general comment and then two kind of under the radar things that I wanted to mention quickly. First, I was really impressed just by how much Citrix, you know, jumped into the deep end of mobility and made that the forefront of their show. You know, by comparison, when you go to VMworld, it's pretty clear that that's still a, data center infrastructure, cloud computing infrastructure show, and mobility is part of it. But you can tell there's, you know, a certain hesitance to not, you know, stray too far from the core audience and the core message. Even though the people who actually are working on the mobility stuff are you know, very gung-ho about it, and it's a good signal. It's like it doesn't get the same spotlight treatment that Citrix did, and I think it's really good of Citrix to jump in that direction. And it seemed like most of the audience there was receptive to it. And I realized that the traditional Citrix audience is a little different than the traditional VMware audience, but it seemed to work really well for Citrix. So that was nice to see.
Well, Colin, then, did you notice in the keynote, like they're like, okay, we're going to talk about mobility. Okay. Zen Desktop.
Yeah. I mean, they were like, there was some of it, but I mean,
so you're giving them a benefit of the doubt. A more jaded person might think like, oh, they've like, you know, the mobility term is hot that day, is hot right now. So they put it under umbrella.
It was a little shoehorning, but I mean, also the Zen Desktop stuff, that's not like what they led the keynote with. I feel like they've spent the majority of the time during the keynote on actual mobility products and demonstrations and content, which, there's always going to be some,
but isn't
whatever washing the latest,
but isn't
trends.
So correct me if I'm wrong, but so Zen Desktop now, Zen Desktop 7, it's now Zen. They've basically merged Zen App and Zen Desktop together, and Zen Desktop, that's what you use to deliver receiver anyways. So like apps and stuff out to a tablet through receivers is you use Zen Desktop for that, right?
Yeah. So the newer like Zen App and Zen Desktop relationship, I'll just say that like Gabe did a video with some of the guys on Citrix at that. So we have like more like the clarifying video/article on that is on its way. But I think what it is, you know, they're doing a good job, I think, of saying like, okay, you know, end-user computing today is lots of platforms, lots of devices, lots of different types of apps. And because, you know, like every now and then we'll get people asking us, like, you know, hey, why are you writing so many articles about, you know, about iPhones at BrianMadden.com? And, you know, like in our consumerization roadshows, you know, we say, like, the, you know, no one for 1 second is, you know, going to say anything like the desktop is dead, but, you know, end user computing, we know, and, you know, we've been saying this for a while now, it's all of these things now. Yeah. And hence us having you know, discussions about iPhones and stuff. And
like Jim was talking about earlier, about how he kind of uses iPhone as just kind of a launching pad for the apps and services he wants to use. I feel like that's kind of happening in general, not just your iPhone, every device and the desktop. It's kind of like a layer of abstraction where, you know, if the technologies that we're talking about are able to, you know, live up to their promise, that's what we'll have. We'll have, you know, a kind of agnostic approach to whatever you're holding in your hand or sitting on your desk, and it'll be the services and apps that live on top of that. And that's why we talk so much about iPhones, not because the iPhone itself is any different in that scenario, but it's kind of a representation of
it's
where we're going and how everything is changing. And it's not going to be about this device. It's about this need to deliver services to these various endpoints. And that's kind of the history of all this application and desktop delivery and virtualization content that we've been, you know, producing and that these vendors have been building for years.
So with that, and that's a very good point. And with that, I want to ask you two a question. And this is a question that I asked at that Geek Speak Tonight session, and the answer is kind of varied. But you know, we talk, you know, like in the VDI delusion and stuff, and, you know, we talk about, you know, before the face of IT was using, you know, we had the Windows operating system as sort of the one bucket that we used to deliver everything, you know, apps, data, runtime, user personality. Like, we had the Windows desktop as the one bucket, as the way of delivering all of that stuff. And as now, as we've had to abstract those things to be able to deliver them, you know, like the same data, but to a different platform with a different application, as we've had to extract those things, as, you know, mobility has happened, does this mean, like, whatever the next, you know, it's arguable that, you know, because when mobility happened and, you know, we were used to delivering all this stuff in the big Windows bucket, and mobility, you know, like, we were like, oh, shoot. And then consumerization and FUIT happened. And now we're starting to figure out, like, okay, we have to break this up and deliver it in all these different ways. Like, so hopefully you're still following me here. But are we going to have that big, shocking point, breaking apart point again? Or is like, this whole realization that, like, we need to, you know, like, disassemble all this stuff and deliver it in lots of different ways, like, is that a one-time event? And so now we'll be, like, safe. We'll be a lot more ready to deal with new challenges as they come along.
I think it's only going to get more and more fragmented, because despite, you know, the idea of apps and data anywhere on any device, the preferable way to access data is through a native application built specifically for that device. And that is the way that these applications are going to continually be developed for the foreseeable future. And because of that, the challenge is always going to be finding ways to provide as close to a native experience as possible on a non-native device. And I think that's only going to increase as the number of devices and operating systems out there continues to grow.
But I'm saying now that we know, like, okay, now we know, like, you know, who cares if there are, like, 40 different mobile device operating systems? Like, we just know that we can't expect, like, just delivering something in one way to work for everybody anymore. And so now that
you're going to have to, like, every new way that you have to do it is going to increase exponentially the number of different ways you have to deliver it. Because, you know, if there's one new way of, if there's one new platform that catches on, that's, you know, four other platforms that you're going to have to deliver those apps to. And then if another one catches on, there's five more. And
but like,
it goes quickly. And then, you know, you think you only had two platforms, but you really just increase your level of complication by 10.
But like, at least, like, at least we know that that's what we have to deal with now, though.
Right. I mean, that's the big challenge, is trying to get into that mindset where you're not focused on managing those devices in a vacuum, but seeing how they fit into your overall strategy, what specific benefits they bring that you can't get on devices, and then trying best to figure out either how to get those experiences on other devices or get the people who are using the competitors onto that other platform.
Okay. Well said.
So, kind of on the same topic, one of the two kind of under the radar things that I wanted to mention about Synergy was talking about the synergy between application and desktop delivery and mobility, and how VMware had merged Vue into the Horizon suite. I asked a Citrix executive at Synergy if they had plans to do the same thing with Zen App, Zen Desktop, and Zen Mobile. And he replied, "Are you coming to Synergy next year?" So kind of hinting that something like that might be in the works down the line for them.
Zen everything.
Yeah. Yeah. I was thinking, like, isn't that just Zen? Like, it'll be a state of Zen, as a state of Zen with a Z. Like, everything is
don't
is everything.
Give them more ideas, Jack. It's going to be like, I can picture it now, like the state of Zen blasted across the screen during the keynote next year.
Yeah. Well, I mean, don't be surprised if, I mean, I was talking to a guy today, and it was actually a mobile backend company, and who was actually surprisingly forthcoming. You know, most of these companies are very cagey, and you know, we were talking about like acquisitions and consolidation in the industry, and you know, he's like, "Well, if, you know, we're venture backed, so if someone makes an offer for us, you know, we'd have to probably look at it and you know, do that." But he was saying that mobile backend services, you know, really would complement MDM and a lot of the other mobile management solutions out there. Kind of hinting that, you know, a lot of these companies, Citrix and VMware, you know, that next wave of major acquisition could become, you know, the mobile backend space. You know, we've already seen Facebook bought Parse like a month ago, maybe. And you know, and so that sort of application development, you know, if you look at kind of in delivering the apps, you know, you need kind of also, you know, building them and supporting them and connecting them to existing databases, you know, falls right in line with that. So
I never really thought of this before, but it seems to be following the evolution of the cloud computing market. If you kind of think of the device and application management that we kind of focus on now as the infrastructure part of it.
Okay.
And that was kind of how, you know, the first wave of cloud computing was talking about infrastructure as a service, and then it kind of evolved into platform as a service. And I think that's kind of the equivalent of mobile backend as a service.
Yeah, mobile backend feels very much like a platform type play. And
so do you guys think this also means that that like Citrix with Zen Mobile and you know, like other companies that have both companies that have mobile offerings or total offerings that go beyond just mobile, as in like the companies that do mobile and other stuff versus the companies that only do EMM, you know, anything like Good, Mobile Iron, AirWatch, that aren't attached to larger things, like those companies are at a disadvantage.
Well, normally I'm like very hesitant about like one throat to choke solutions that vendors talk about a lot. You know, vendors push these all-in-one solutions as like the greatest thing since sliced bread, and it'll solve all your problems. And then, you know, you talk to real people in IT and they say, no, we like to pick and choose. And I don't really, you know, I don't want one vendor deciding what's best for me for, you know, from soup to nuts for my project. But I was asking people about this at Synergy, and, one guy in particular said to me, no, I like mobility is so complicated and so different that it's much easier to just to get it all from one company in one fell swoop than to try to pick and choose these products that we're, you know, not all familiar with every aspect of, and especially if that company is someone that you already have an existing relationship with, like a Citrix. It sounded like those companies might actually be better off than some of the point solutions out there.
Yeah. So like if you're a Citrix shop, and you know you're looking at mobility stuff now, like it sounds like then is there even much of a question? You know, do you look at an AirWatch or a Mobile Iron, or is it instantly like, okay, you know, Zen Mobile and we're done?
Yeah, well, and this is, you know, not to circle back to BlackBerry too, but something I kind of asked a lot of companies and a lot of the people at BlackBerry show, you know, they have Bez and they have something else, you know, AirWatch, Mobile Iron, whatever. And a lot of them were like, yeah, you know, it could go either way. But if, you know, because we've invested so heavily already in BlackBerry and, you know, a lot of these other companies are SaaS companies and it's, you know, pay as you go per month. They're like, if the new BlackBerry does what we need it to do, then we'll drop our, you know, AirWatch or Mobile Iron in a heartbeat. You know, that's not always going to be the case, but I imagine, you know, for Citrix customers, it's the same thing. I imagine for, you know, VMware customers, if they've got, you know, Vue installations and all this other stuff that, you know, they're going to be looking at Zen Mobile and some of these other solutions if they don't already have something in place, because you know, because the difference is that it, again, it's not necessarily the device, but with Citrix, you know, it's very much an application deployment, you know, virtualization deployment strategy beyond simply just managing the devices.
Right. And if you look at it like we talked about before, where everything's kind of merging together, if you're missing that traditional application delivery part of it, you're going to have to go out and get it somewhere else anyways. And the companies that you're going to, if the companies that you're going to do that already have mobility, which it's probably going to be either Citrix or VMware, and they do, you know, what's the point of doing something, going with a different vendor, unless they have some, you know, killer feature that blows everything else away, which I don't really think is the case for the most part these days.
So, With that, if you guys are all set, the last thing that
I just had my other quick under the radar thing. Citrix also said that they plan to have 500 ISVs participating in the Works Apps program by the end of the year, which would totally blow away any other number that any other MAM vendor has in terms of the number of apps that they're able to offer in their wrapping solution. So. If they can live up to that, I mean, that's pretty significant. And I don't know if we're planning on transitioning into the standards discussion or something else right now, but that would kind of obliterate the need for standards, I think, if you had that much choice from one vendor.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, I've always said, you know, whether standards come as formal standards from an organization or as de facto standards from you know, one or two vendors, you know, simply dominating the marketplace, you know, I don't care where the standards come from. You know, I was always just saying that, like, having an app out there with the good version and the Citrix version and the Mobile Iron version and the Symantec version and the AppSense version, like, that's not going to be sustainable.
Right. And if there's, you know, one or two companies that have hundreds of apps and pretty much give you everything you need, they'll kind of become those de facto standards.
So, and like that, so, you know, at the show they claimed 60 partner vendors with 80 apps, and, you know, if I'm not mistaken, that, like, already puts them in the lead.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, the one that they compared to for me, I think they said, I forget what vendor it was, but the highest number that they said from a competitor was like in the 20s, I believe. So, I mean, that's coming from Citrix.
Yeah.
So I don't know if there's something else that's higher out there, but
if you go to, like, the other day I went to, you know, if you go to the good technology, like the Good Dynamics, like, mobile app store, I think as of the other day, there were like 26 apps in there.
Yeah. That was the one that was good with 26.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, how does that compare to, say, something like an Appirion where, like, I think Appirion, I don't think you necessarily have, like, pre-bundled apps, but it's pretty easy to publish the app through a period, right? Or like Mokana where
right. But that depends on what's your vision of the future for mobile application management. Like those would all be assuming like you know, you're doing those as enterprise signed applications. And so is your vision for the future of mobile application management, is it like there are manageable apps available in the public app stores, or is it like enterprise apps are doing, you know, like the people are doing more, you know, app wrapping each other's apps and distributing them as in-house apps?
I don't see the in-house apps really taking off. Just, I mean, for resources, that was something that came up a lot at Synergy too, from the people I was talking to. A lot of these companies just don't have the time, staff with the proper experience and skills to be building all of these apps.
Let's say like not necessarily people, like not necessarily apps that a company built, but just apps that, like, however they got them, they're distributing them as enterprise signed apps, regardless of where they came from.
I mean, I guess that, I mean, it's kind of like,
see,
I don't really, I understand it's a different distribution model, but I don't really see the huge difference in why you would go with one over the other. And if there's a marketplace where there's, you know, 500 available and you can just kind of pick and choose what you want with the click of a button, like it's your own app store, and then give it to an app store for the users, I feel like it might just be simpler to do that, unless there's, you know, something specific that isn't available that you need to make available.
Like maybe the distinction. Yeah. So, you know, what I'm envisioning, we talk about this idea of like users will want to have, you know, the choice of different apps to use to work with their content. So if there are multiple apps, you know, on the public app market space where the users to go and get all of their other apps, and there are multiple ones that are all built to the same management standard, so the user can pick, you know, whether they swipe up to delete their email or whether they swipe down to delete their email, because, you know, different apps, you know, whatever. Like if there's a wide variety of different manageable apps out there in the public sphere that users can pick, then that sort of gives us our, you know, closer to mobile information management aspiration type thing.
Yeah, that came up in a comment to one of the Zen Mobile articles I wrote on brianmadden.com. Somebody was saying how with Zen Mobile, you can kind of enforce policies where that govern how works-enabled apps interact with each other and how they can transmit data between one another or not. And, you know, I think our traditional concept of mobile information management is that the policy is applied directly to the bit of information.
But in the reality, we have to.
But like I said, my response to that comment, you know, I think that's just kind of semantics, and I really don't think it matters as long as you're really, you know, as long as the apps are kind of in a self-contained environment where, you know, the big problem with the way we've talked about MIM in the past is that it's not just a mobile problem, it's like a Dropbox problem. And if something gets out of your off your phone and into Dropbox, then you, without MIM, you really can't control what happens to it there. But
I think in this
approach, you can, because the Works app wouldn't let it send to Dropbox in the first place, and there's no way you could get it out of that Works-enabled ecosystem.
But so the thing is, the way that I think of it is you have to have some sort of client that can recognize those policies that accompany that data. So like if making the client that can respect the management policies that go around the data, like to me that means like if there are multiple different Works email clients, you know, Works compatible email clients out there on the App Store, then that means that there are like multiple different clients that can respect the, you know, the the app management policies when you when you log into that system. So like, it's like it's still mobile application management because you know that app has to be built to work with Works, but it's mobile information management because there are there would be like multiple Works enabled clients, and the user could pick whichever one they want. And when it gets plugged into the corporate system, it would you know respect those policies.
Yeah, it seems like they go hand in hand.
I'll take that silence as agreement. Yeah.
Yes. Check and mate.
So that's why that's why my belief is that the future that lends me to believe that the future would be something like where these like these manageable apps, you know, they're out there in the public app stores. So, you know, if you're a corporate user, you know, you have your corporate email and you go look like for corporate email clients and like all these different works enabled email clients come up. And, you know, we just hope that in this future land that the, you know, background mail syncing issue is solved.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens. I mean, in terms of that, you know, I think for a lot of companies, smaller companies that don't have a lot of restrictions or regulations surrounding them, you know, none of this might even be an issue because they might, you know, migrate to, you know, third-party cloud, you know, apps where they're using Gmail and Box and, you know, take your pick of whatever, Salesforce. And most of those companies are going to do mobile clients, but the data is kind of protected and it's kind of overseen with sort of an identity and access solution like a, you know, log me in or ping identity or, you know, one login or whatever.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. So let me, so I think I'm following you. So you're saying like a lot of like SaaS services, like the client app will inherently have whatever it needs to have, it will be inherently built in. So you don't need to worry about, you know, Works or whatever. Just by subscribing to that service, you know, like the users can log into the clients and they have what they need to have on them.
Yeah. You know, and so perhaps I think a lot of those apps probably in the future might have, you know, the ability to, you know, from that one app, you know, you can log in if it's say like a Dropbox, right? And you've got personal Dropbox, or you know, maybe you have a corporate instance of Dropbox. Well, I wouldn't be surprised if in the future, yeah, like something like a Dropbox, you know, you can log in with multiple accounts. So you've got, you know, you log into your personal, and then you can just switch back and forth between your personal and your corporate, right, in the app. And maybe the app itself is kind of, there's a firewall between the two, so you can't necessarily shuffle documents, or maybe you can depending on that policy. But I think it's going to be remarkably different between, you know, larger companies with legacy infrastructure that are going to be taking 10 years to figure this out versus, you know, smaller, more nimble companies that, you know, where, you know, now the device doesn't really matter at all because you're just using a browser or native apps on the devices to log in and do everything.
Right, right. Okay, so we have 2 minutes left. And so in that 2 minutes, you know, in a week and a half, on June 10th, is Apple's Worldwide Developer Conference, where yep. We'll probably learn about iOS 7. So 30 seconds from each of you, and I'll like 15 seconds from each of you. What are you hoping for? What are you expecting? Or what are you thinking about the possibilities for that time?
I know that they're going for a new look, and I appreciate that, and I think it is a good thing because the current look of iOS is pretty old and staid. But the key thing is to make sure that they don't make it so different that it kind of gets rid of what has made the iPhone so successful in the first place.
Yep. Yeah, I would agree with that. I think for me, it would be just opening it up just a little bit more. I'd like to see, you know, the ability. So I use like the Chrome browser on iOS. I have the Gmail app. And so it'd be nice if iOS, they open it up just a little bit so I can kind of choose some of my default apps by choice, as opposed to sort of just relying on their mail client or their, you know, Safari or stuff like that. But yeah, it would be interesting to see what they come out with, but I'd like to see them kind of, I don't need like crazy widgets or stuff like that, but just kind of loosen the reins on some of the restrictions on the OS.
I like widgets.
Yeah. And so I'll say, you know, while the attention...
I like LAMP.
Do you really like the widgets, or are you just saying that because they're there?
Yeah.
While the attention will be on the new flat UI, for the last six iOS releases, we've seen each one an incremental advancement in management capabilities and in openness. So there's no doubt that we'll see something like that again. The question is, what are they going to choose to add or open up this time? So I'm looking forward to find out the answer. And with that, it's 11 o'clock. Thank you, Jim, for joining us. Thank you, Colin. Thank you, Justin, for being our producer. And thank you, everybody, for listening.
Bye, everybody.
Take care.